This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hey there, welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Well, my youngest daughter just turned 13, and rather than have a big party for her bat mitzvah like a lot of her friends, she decided she'd rather take a trip. And top of her list was Costa Rica. I'm not sure how it got there, but it was there, and I'm really, really glad that it was, because she and I and her mother packed up, and we planned a whole bunch of things to do while we were there, and off we went. And we were there for 10 days, had an absolutely fantastic time. The scenery is absolutely amazing. There are beaches all the way up to cloud forests, about 5,000 or 6,000 feet above sea level. The animals are absolutely stunning. You cannot imagine the diversity of frogs and birds and butterflies and everything all over the place. But in this part of today's show, we're going to be focusing on one thing, and that is adventure travel, which I'm a big, big fan of, and so is my daughter. And in particular, we're going to be focusing on one company called 100% Aventura, which has a whole bunch of activities, zip lining and ATV tours and horseback riding and a lot of other stuff. We'll be talking with one of the gentlemen that runs the company about safety, about zip lining, about adventure travel, about nature and nature guides, and a lot more. We'll jump into all of it when Positive Parenting continues right after this.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this. From the MrDad.com radio network.
Okay, forest animals, today is a new day. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow.
Yes?
Have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. Okay, river.
Dude.
How's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man. Perfect for a little riverside shoeless relaxation.
Ah, good. Owl, you here?
Of course.
Who's asking? I am. Look, you know the drill. Sleep during the day, scare the kids at night.
Perfect. I love my job.
Oak tree?
Sup?
Still in the same place I left you last year. That's what I like. Consistency.
Well, it's not like I'm going anywhere for the next couple hundred years.
I know. I love it. Turtle. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. You'd think you would have learned by now to leave the night before our meetings. Okay. Squirrel. Has anybody seen Mr. Squirrel?
The forest has been preparing just for you. Visit a forest near you today. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. My guest for this part of today's show is Jovan Rodriguez, who's with a company called 100% Aventura in Monteverde, Costa Rica. Jovan, thanks for joining us. As mentioned in the introduction, we're going to be talking about a lot of the stuff that we did on a family trip, a really exciting family trip in Costa Rica. And we're going to be talking with Jovan about some of the great things that my daughter and I did with 100% Aventura. Just a quick warning, as you're going to hear, we recorded this interview right there on the spot at 100% Aventura, so it's a little bit noisy in the background. But there's so much great information in there that you're hardly even going to notice all that noise. The interview started just after my daughter and I had finished going through the entire range of things to do. We were sweaty, we were drenched from the rain, but absolutely delighted. And I started by asking Jovan to give us an overview of all the activities that they've got going at 100% Aventura.
For sure, for sure. Well, we provide four different activities. And so you can definitely do, you know, just a few hours here with us up to a full day or half day. Depending on what you want to do. And so the four activities are the bread and butter, which is the canopy zip lining. You have hanging bridges. You also have horseback riding and ATV tours. And what you did today was the canopy zip lining. That consists of a total of 9 cables. In between, we break it up into sections. So you do the first 2 cables. We call them our starter cables. It's just to help you get kind of a hint of what you're going to do out there. Then right after you're done with the second cable, you come over a monkey bridge, a suspension bridge, a ropes course type bridge. That's section number 1. Section number 2 is 4 cables. One of those cables is a pretty fast cable, so there's a braking system on there. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
And so they stop you, they slow you down. At the end of that section, that second section, you reach a rappel, which is a vertical descent down the rope. Once you get to the bottom, you walk back up to the same platform they lowered you from, and that's where you start to encounter your first long cables.
Yeah.
That first one is 600 meters long, and you actually leave the mountain where you started from, and you go to a completely different mountain. You do a 15-18 minute hike, which we're getting ready to modify now. We just purchased a Yamaha mule, so it'll sit about five people. So we'll accumulate five people, and then we'll take you up and then come down for another five and kind of keep the flow going, so there's not so much hiking involved, or for people who don't want to participate with the hike.
Well, that was, I was just actually going to ask you that, because I was thinking just before we started talking here, we were mentioning that you grew up in Puerto Rico and spent a lot of time in Miami, so hence the incredible English that's accent free. I couldn't quite figure out where you were from and had to ask. But so you spent time basically in the United States.
Yes.
And you must be generally familiar with our legal system. And as I'm going through this, I'm thinking, oh my God, I can't imagine taking four steps without a lawyer jumping on and saying, you can't do that. Oh my God, yeah, people are going to scream. And everything is that. Not to say that it's in the least bit dangerous. I want to make that very clear. But I mean, you've got such a double safety checks, and all of the guys are fantastic at making sure that everything is done safely.
Yeah.
But is that an issue in Costa Rica at all?
It's not. I think that for anybody who's going to come and visit Costa Rica, just the topography and the terrain in Costa Rica alone, anything that you're going to do is going to require some type of hiking. And then especially when you start to get into canopy, you know, canopy works with gravity. You got to get up to a high point, you know, to work your way down. And then you can only do that so many times before at one point or another, you got to hike back up again. And so that's one of the major hikes that we have. And we've realized that, you know, in the last few years that we've had that particular cable open, which is the long one that you get to after the long hike, that we've just had a lot of feedback from our guests, you know, saying, wow, it's a real tiring hike, you know.
Yeah.
And so we've made the modifications to, you know, eliminate it in such a way where we accumulate five people, you know, and then we, you know, take you up and then come down for another five. There's still going to be people who say, hey, I don't mind a walk, and they want to walk. And so, you know, they're able to do that as well. But once you're done with that walk, or after we get the transport and we get you guys up there, that's when you encounter your first Superman cable,
Right. Okay,
which is 2,000 meters long, so probably close to a mile and a half. And you do that laying down.
And that one, it was interesting. I forgot what the Superman thing was all about. And so they kind of get you twisted around. I wasn't quite sure what to do. But so you're going down on your face with your hands out in front of you pretty much. And, you know, just to describe it, I can't really describe it. I'm going to have to get some pictures up there on the website that you're going down. You're on your face. This thing is, as you said, it's like more than a mile long. And you go through the clouds, and there's moments you can't see the cable anymore. And it's just, it's beautiful. You're flying. And there's, forget about the fact that the cable broke. But the cable doesn't break on you.
No. Let me tell you something. We've had pilots come here. Pilots, and they say that the Superman cable alone is the closest that they've gotten to feeling like they're actually flying in that position. And so it's pretty impressive to get that feedback from somebody who's a pilot who does this for a living on a daily basis, you know, saying that that is the closest that they've gotten to actually flying like a bird. And today's a special day because we're in that transition period now of going from dry season to rainy season. And so, like I mentioned to you before, you know, these next few days we're going to determine, you know, whether it was going to start to rain or not. So yesterday was the first day it rained. Today we had rain again. And with that rain comes this cloud cover. And so the first time I ever did canopy, probably 14 years ago, it was this very type of weather, very similar. And for me, I remember specifically going across and not being able to tell, like, whether I was moving, how fast I was going. There was no point of reference as you're going through this cloud. So it's really cool. Your mind plays a trick on you because you're hearing the sound of the pulley on the cable, but you can't reference how fast you're going, or you can't see anything that's moving until all of a sudden you get to the other side and you come into the forest and you realize how fast you're actually traveling.
Now, I want to get back to some of the other activities you're doing up here, but as I've been driving through Costa Rica somewhat, I was having a conversation with somebody, with one of our guides, and we were talking about the quality of the roads, which in many places is just beyond horrible. And he was saying that there's a reason for that, which is that there's this subtle kind of not wanting to have too many people come here because it's going to change the nature of things and change the impact on the environment and everything else. And you look around and everybody is concerned about sustainability, and they've got recycling bins all over the place. And I mean, really, there's a feeling about taking care of the land and the earth. Now, what do you think about that? I mean, as a businessman, you know, your business is obviously based on people coming here.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've got to go through these horrible roads to get here. I mean, how do you deal with that? What do you think about that?
Believe it or not, we get over 250,000 visitors a year. And they come through Monteverde. It sounds like big numbers, but you have to realize there's a lot of coastline. There's a lot of coastline on the Pacific, on the Caribbean. And so people, you know, maybe visit one or two beaches, you know, and there's still a lot of other coastline that they'll never see on the Caribbean and the Pacific. There's only one Monteverde, and so everybody filters through here at one point or another if you're going from the Caribbean to the Pacific or vice versa. And so we get that many visitors on a yearly basis. Years ago, we're talking maybe 25 years ago, 30 years ago, there was no such thing as a low season. And the reason there was no such thing as a low season is because there was a limited amount of tours, limited amount of hotels, mm-hmm. and so there was enough for everybody on a yearly basis. And now with the growth that's happened because of that amount of people, then now everybody feels a low season, you know? So when these low months come, you know, you see numbers reduce. But we're one of the only companies in all of Monteverde that reduce the amount of people that travel through the park on a daily basis. So we work with about 200 to 210 people per day, and we divide that within the four tours, and we're talking just for Canopy, where other companies during high season, in just one tour alone, they'll put 100 to 120 people per tour. And they do that four or five times a day. And so because it's a family-owned business, the farm's been in the family for over 40 years. Everybody who works here at one point or another is family. And so they want to try to keep it as a sustainable business. They don't want to grow so much, or they're not worried so much about the roads, because they're working with the amount of people that they can handle on a daily basis during high season, and that helps them get through the low season. And so
I was thinking as we're driving through, and as I'm talking with Jose, who was telling us about this, I'm thinking, you know, I want everybody to come here and do all these wonderful things that we've been doing, but be nice.
Yes.
Take care of things, and don't trash stuff, and don't climb over the fences in the park and try to chase birds up a tree or whatever. It's like, just be reasonable about it. But tell us a little bit about some of the other activities, the horseback riding and the ATV.
So we do ATV tours. We're the only company in all of Monteverde that does ATV tours. We work with what's called responsible tourism. We've been around the country. We've done a bunch of other tours. And one thing that we've noticed is with a lot of other places, if you pay for it, you do it, you know, and whatever the outcome is what happens. Here, when it comes to ATV tours, we realize that it's one of the few activities that you do when you're on vacation anywhere in the world that you're in control of your own safety. And so Monteverde, as you saw, and we talked about the roads earlier, okay, it's not the easiest place in the world to drive, period, whether it's a motorcycle, a car, or an ATV. So what we do is we put you on a practice course, and we make sure it's a safe activity for you. We do a few laps, and that will help us determine, you know, whether you're in control of the ATV. And if you're not, most guests will automatically say, hey, listen, this is not for me. And at that point, we still refund your money. So we've picked you up at the hotel. We've given you transportation. We spend 20 minutes with you on an ATV. We'll refund your money and still take you back down to your hotel. We want to make sure that you finish your vacation the same way that you got here. If you're able to get past the practice course, we go to an open area where you're able to ride freely under the supervision of the guides. This kind of helps the guides, you know, get a feel for you, see what level you're at. And then because we use the farm as a park, we have a bunch of different trails, and trails have different levels, just like a ski lift or a ski resort. So we know we can take you through, you know, pretty difficult trails, or we should take you through easy trails depending on what level you're at. That's just with the ATV tours.
And what's the age limit for that? Do you have to have a regular driver's license from someplace?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Have to have a regular driver's license from the country that you're coming from. That's the only way that, and we know that you're of age. that you can, you know, have some type of knowledge over a vehicle. And so, pretty. It's a fun tour. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
And so, sorry. So there was the canopy tours that we did with the zip lining. Mm-hmm.
The ATV tour. ATV. You got hanging bridges.
So tell us about the hanging bridges. I want to get to that one too.
Hanging bridges, okay, so hanging bridges, the type of hanging bridges that we have are much smaller hanging bridges. There are two other companies in the area that have some pretty huge hanging bridges, very tall. So for some people, when they go across these, they feel very intimidated, they kind of get a little nervous, get a little scared. And so we've made ours a little bit smaller, a little bit more narrow, so it's a little bit more comfortable for people as they come across. And it's all about perspective.
And when you say smaller, do you mean smaller, like lower or narrower?
Narrower. Narrow.
So you still have the terror of looking down.
They're still as high, but at least you can feel like you can grab a hold of each side if your knees get a little weak.
Yeah.
And it's all about perspective. You're out there. Over 350 different species of plants only go on the trees. So you have a guide with you. The cool part about this tour is that there is a strangler fig. And so for people who don't know what a strangler fig is, it's a tree that kind of wraps around a host tree, strangles that tree, and within a process of maybe 150 to 200 years, that original tree rots away and creates a void. And so what's left is the outer tree, and it creates a bunch of handles and a big void in the middle that you can actually climb in and out of, which is really cool. And you can actually go from ground level up to where the bridge is at or vice versa. And then while you're out there, you know, you're looking for birds, you're looking for animals, you're learning about the forest. It's super educational.
And you get a lot of people on that too. You said you have about 200 people a day coming through, right?
Mm-hmm. That would be 200 people a day would be just for the canopy zip lining. 200 people a day would be just for the canopy zip lining. And then you've got a capacity of about 30, 40 people for the hanging bridges. And then you divide it into groups of five or seven, you know, with a particular guide as they start to go out. Groups never get that big. With the hanging bridges, but you can still during high season maybe one of the two of the tours you can run into numbers that size.
And so we've got left the horseback riding. Huh? My daughter's been bugging me about all day. Gotta go horseback riding.
Gotta go horseback.
So tell us about that one.
So the horseback riding is also a family owned business as well. It's also a family owned business, and one of the brothers is the one that takes care of the horses. We have about 20 horses. They're on the farm. And we use other trails that are on the farm to take you guys through. A lot of other horseback riding tours will use the main roads in Monteverde. And here, this is the closest that you'll get to like being in the jungle, being in the forest as you're going through there. And it's also, you know, a little educational as well. You know, they'll show you the different trees. And if you're lucky, and we all hope that we do get lucky, meet some animals while you're out there.
Well, I'll tell you, we were in Manuel Antonio before coming here, which is a whole other ecosystem.
For sure.
And I would actually be talking about that in another segment on the show. But we were out on a guided tour. And I have to say about the guides, first of all, I think a lot of people who, and maybe listening to this, and I remember I was in this category too, you think a guide, oh, it's going to be some high school kid who doesn't know anything. No, these are people who have been to school and they've taken at least a year-long course in biology and ecology and flora and fauna. These guys know what they're talking about.
They do.
Saw everything. We saw two-toed sloths and three-toed sloths and howler monkeys and spider monkeys. And, I mean, some of it's a little far away, but they all have these wonderful scopes and you can take pictures of.
You know what? It's a dying trade. It's a dying profession because if you think about it, there's not too many parts in the world where people go out to try to, you know, put all their effort into learning about these things as a job. You know, you're not going to do this in the city. You know, this is out in places like this where people actually, you know, take their time, and that's what they study for. And so it's one of those professions that if people don't come and they don't use a guide, you know, it's one of those professions that end up dying out in the future. And so it's great that people take advantage of them because it's really the only way that you get 100% out of your experience anywhere that you go. If you walk into, you know, a primary forest, you're going to enjoy it. You're going to say, wow, this is cool. This is beautiful. This is something I've never seen before. But that's as far as it goes. You are not going to be able to spot out animals. And there's life all around you. You're hearing birds and you're hearing things all around you. But for you to spot it and for you to see it without the right tools that these guides have and the knowledge that they have, is a whole other story. And so it's great to have that guide, because that's when you walk out with an appreciation of the place that you visited. Instead of saying, yeah, I went there, I saw it, and that's pretty much all I got out of it.
You know, we were out this morning for a just absolutely terrific bird watching tour. We're walking through, I'm thinking there's maybe, I have no idea, 20, 30, 40 different kinds of calls that I'm hearing out there. And Michael, our guide, was, you know, he's saying, okay, that one, you hear that one that sounds like somebody's running their finger over a crystal glass? Well, that's the solitario. And you know, here, let me show you. So he gets out his scope, and he's pointing. How do you even see something like that?
See that?
And they find these. And, yeah, there may be an app at some point where you can, here, you could just, like, Shazam for bird calls. You know, you can you say, oh, yeah, that's the, you know, call or the horn, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But it's not going to show you where it is.
No.
And that, I mean, having these guys out there, I mean, the guides, in my personal experience, my personal advertising for you, but they know what they're doing, and it's not a lot of money, and it's not going to be the Lonely Planet guide, which is wonderful, but it's not going to get you the kind of knowledge that these guys have, and it's also not going to get you to be able to see what you came to see.
They're incredible. They're incredible. And I've been here for about 12 years. I've got a few good friends that do this for a living. And, you know, I love animals. And I'm always, you know, every once in a while, I'll get the itch. I'll go out there with them. And I'm always trying to see if I can spot the bird or the animal before they do. And it never fails. It never fails. I'm there, and there's a lot of, like, key things that you look at. These guys have these scopes, these spotting scopes. And sometimes you might walk up onto a group where there could be with another guide, and that spotting scope is already aimed at the animal, you know, or the bird. And I try to avoid looking at that angle or not seeing where that scope is at, so to see if I can spot it. And these guys are amazing. They're amazing. They'll spot a small snake, you know, I don't know, 20 meters away, 30 meters away on a tree where everything is green, the snake is green. You're like, how do they do that?
Yeah.
You know? And they just work. They work on the different shades of colors. They know how to pick this stuff up because this is their classroom. This is what they do for a living.
Now, I don't know if it's Costa Rica. You can tell me about this or not. But I was talking to Michael this morning about this. I thought it was. I noticed this in Manuel Antonio on the tour and also on the tour today, that there's a sense of camaraderie with these guides. That, you know, as we're walking by somebody. You know, Michael is saying, hey, what'd you see up there? And the other guy's saying, hey, what'd you see? And they're saying, oh, look, you know, they're not, you know, each one of them is taking a private tour or a group tour through, and they're getting paid. It would be so easy to just want to keep it all to yourself, but they're all sharing this information, which makes it so much richer, because everybody gets to see so much more.
This is part of the new generation. The new generation has taken this upon themselves to do this, because it used to not be that way. It used to not be that way. A private tour was a private tour, and if they saw another guy coming, you know, they would, you know, pack up their stuff and move forward, you know. But when it comes to tourism, when it comes to working with people, customer service, when it comes to all this stuff, you know, you want the client to walk away happy, you know. And it doesn't cost you anything if you're one guy to another, say, hey, look, you know, this is over there, I saw this over here, you know. You still, he can give you kind of directions. You still have to spot it out.
Yeah.
There's not an arrow. There's not a laser pointer. There's nothing there showing you exactly where it is. You know, the guy still has to spot it. And so a lot of times they communicate with themselves and they say, hey, listen, you know, 100 meters this way, look at this tree. You know, halfway up, you'll see this bird or a nest there. You know, and they'll tell that to each other privately, you know, without maybe the guest knowing. And if the guide is really good, he'll spot it. And if he can't, you know, he'll know it's there, but he might not be able to see it. And so it's good. I'm glad to see that they have gotten to this point, because years and years ago it wasn't like that.
Once again, I want to thank Jovan Rodriguez from 100% Aventura for hosting us while we were up in Monteverde and for telling us about all the great things they do. You can find out more information at AventuraCanopyTour.com, and there's also a link on our website, MrDad.com.
This message is for all of you sitting in the passenger seat. And apologies if it gets a little uncomfortable, but how does it feel to be at the mercy of someone who thinks a random text is more important than your life? Someone who takes their eyes off the road while speeding along in a 3-ton hunk of steel. Freaky, right? Well, why not just ask them to stop? Or better yet, volunteer to text for them. It might be a little awkward, but believe me, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Hey there, welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Broad. You know, the hotter it gets, and it seems to be getting hotter by the day in some parts of the country, the more people want to cool off. Running your air conditioning, of course, is one way to deal with all that heat, but it can be rather pricey. A cheaper and much more fun alternative is to go outside and get wet. Here are some of our favorite ways to soak yourself and everyone else around you. Water Warriors Water Blasters from Buzzbee Toys. Now, Buzzbee Toys makes more than a dozen different kind of water blasters, all of which are solidly made, reasonably priced, and really, really fun. The Gargantua uses air pressure and what they call aggressive soaking technology, which lets you blast people as far as 40 feet away. And it is indeed gargantuan, holding up to 78 ounces of water. That's more than half a gallon, which means that you're going to be able to keep on blasting for a long, long time. Just fill it up, choose one of three nozzle settings, and start soaking away. The Outlaw is a little bit smaller, but what it lacks in water capacity, it only holds 48 ounces, if you can say only, it makes up for in distance, outblasting Gargantua by 2 feet. Both of these blasters are easy to pump, so little kids are going to be able to hold their own against bigger, older, and stronger opponents. Gargantua is aimed at kids ages 8 and up, Outlaw for 5 and up. Both of them are under $20. You can find out more at Buzzbee Toys. Water sprinklers from Primetime Toys. Running through sprinklers on a hot summer day is one of the best parts of summer. Sadly, millions of kids who live in drought-stricken parts of the country missed out for the past few years. Fortunately, though, reservoirs are almost up to normal levels, so sprinklers are back. The Hydro Swirl Spinning Sprinkler connects directly to a standard garden hose and comes fully assembled, so you'll be ready to get drenched within seconds after you unbox the thing. The center fountain of the swirl spins around, spraying water in all directions, and the squirting wiggle tubes ensure that no one escapes dry. Like the swirl, the Hydro Twist Pipeline Sprinkler also connects to a standard hose and has wiggle tubes, but this sprinkler also has two fountains. The droughts may be over, but you should still soak responsibly. Both are for ages 4 and up and retail for under $15. Find out more at Primetime Toys. Bunch o' Balloons from Zuru. Preparing for a water balloon fight can take hours, filling them with water and tying them up one at a time. Bunch o' Balloons gives you an incredible advantage. Just attach it to your hose, and in less than a minute, you've got yourself 100 filled and tied balloons so you can get down to the serious business of battle while your opponents are still fumbling around. Bunch o' Balloons come in a variety of colors. The pack that we reviewed also included a scoop-like launcher, which can extend your range by quite a bit. It's for ages 4 and up, retails for about $13. Find out more at bunchoballoons.com. Hurricane Water Balls from Primetime Toys. Bunch of balloons may speed things up, but eventually you're going to run out of ammo. Not so with Hurricane Water Balls, which can be reused up to 1,000 times. The clever design allows you to refill the ball quickly by simply dunking it in a bucket of water for a few seconds. Just like regular balloons, Hurricane Water Balls explode painlessly on contact, leaving your opponent wet but bruise-free. For ages 5 and up, and anyone who's looking for a more environmentally sustainable way to soak each other. They're about $12 for a package of 3. You can find out more at hurricanewaterballs.com. You can also find a lot more reviews of toys and games, great things to do with your family, with your kids, at parentsatplay.com. We'll be back next week with another Parents at Play column or an Ask Mr. Dad column. But don't go quite yet because there's a lot more positive parenting straight ahead.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Now, get ready for more positive parenting with Armin Brott. from the MrTad.com radio network.
Hello and welcome to the second part of today's Positive Parenting Show. I'm Armin Brott. Back in 2009, Janet Eadie of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service stood before a crowd of grassroots leaders gathered from across the nation by the Children and Nature Network. She held up an outsized pharmacy bottle. On the bottle, just like there would be on any other medication bottle, were the instructions from the physician. And these instructions apply just as well to adults as to children. And here's what the label said. Directions. Use daily. Outdoors in nature. Go on a nature walk, watch birds and observe trees, practice respectful outdoor behavior in solitude or take with friends and family. Refills? Unlimited. Expires? Never. Here was a deceptively simple treatment for improving physical and mental health, for stimulating learning, creativity, and a sense of being fully alive. Definitely not a panacea, but an appropriate elixir in the age of nature deficit disorder. And what do we call it? Vitamin N. In this part of today's show, we're going to be talking with journalist and advocate and educator Richard Louv, who was a guest on the show to talk about his last book, Last Child in the Woods, which introduced us and the rest of the world to that phrase I mentioned just a second ago, nature deficit disorder. Richard's going to be talking to us about the tremendous benefits of having more nature in our lives and how we can go about accomplishing the goal of getting it. I'm Armin Brott. We'll talk about how to get more vitamin N when Positive Parenting continues right after this.
Hey, is that a faucet running?
Nope, that's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest.
It is?
Yeah, forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink. The water comes straight from the forest to us, in fact.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
How do trees clean the air?
They soak up the dirty air on their leaves, branches, and trunks, which means clean air for us.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yep. But the forest does more than give us clean air and water. It gives us shade for hot days, birds to listen to, and trees to climb.
Wow. That's awesome. I didn't know how cool the forest could be. Hey, let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does, just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. My guest for this part of today's show is Richard Louv, who is the author of Vitamin N, The Essential Guide to a Nature-Rich Life, 500 Ways to Enrich the Health and Happiness of Your Family and Community. And combat nature deficit disorder. I think that becomes the record holder for the longest subtitle, but it's all important. And we've had you on to talk about nature deficit disorder, which I have used that phrase probably at least once a month and refer to the book. And I'm just thinking, I mean, there were some great examples that you gave in there that about, let's see if I get this right, about how maybe it was sometime in the 70s or 60s or something when 85% of people rode their bike to school, and now it is exactly the opposite, where there's the 15% are riding their bike to school, and how that was an example, I think. Did I get that about right? Pretty close?
Sounds like it. I'm bad at remembering the statistics in my own book. I don't know about you. But
well, but it was something shocking like that. Yeah. And, I mean, just as an example of the way that we are out of touch with being outside, that we just aren't there. Yeah. Anyway, it's wonderful to have you back.
Actually, there's some worse examples these days. In the UK, a study was done recently. And not only do 42% of the parents think in Britain that their children spend too little time in nature, but the prisoners at maximum security facilities in Britain spend more time outside than kids there do. That appears to be true for our country as well. And this is around the world. This isn't just the U.S., by the way.
Well, somebody is going to draw a conclusion one of these days, or a connection between the amount of time that people are getting outside and their likelihood of ending up in maximum security. It's probably not going to be a very happy study. But so let's talk, just set the stage for us again, for those who have not been following what's going on with our changing approach to nature and our basic lack of getting any of it. Set the stage for us. You know, what, how much of it is are we not getting, and what are the benefits, roughly?
Sure. Last Child in the Woods was the first of these three books, and they make a kind of trilogy, I think. And that was about kids and the disconnect from nature. The Nature Principle was the second one. That's 2011, and that's more about you and me. It's about adults. And it was also about a vision of what would a society be like if, you know, we spent as much time in nature as we do in technology. And the third book, the one that just came out, is Vitamin N, and that is a guide book. It's a manual. It's one of those kind of books, of 500 things you can do to deal with this issue, and it's a practical approach. When Last Child in the Woods first came out, we didn't really have a language, I don't think, to talk about this disconnect. In fact, the studies were just beginning to come out, both about the disconnect and about the benefits of nature. The people who study child development and in fact, adult development throughout our lives had really ignored this issue. And then suddenly they started paying attention. So this disconnect is larger than anything that's happened in our history and prehistory in terms of relationship with nature. Never before have human beings spent so little time in the natural world. And for millennia, you know, human children went outside and spent most of their developing years outdoors in nature. And now within just a few decades, we're seeing the disappearance of that, perhaps. And I say perhaps because there is good news. I mean, there is indications or anecdotal evidence, at the very least, that the awareness of this issue is much higher than it was 10 years ago when Last Child came out. What we don't know is how much action is being taken, and that's why Vitamin N seems to be helpful.
Well, we still hear about cases where there's less recess time at school and, you know, kids are just not getting it, and that it's not only a question of the decreasing amount of time, but it seems to be the decreasing amount of availability as well. That there are parks that are closing because of budget things, but also probably because of attendance. They seem to be working together.
Well, I just got back from speaking in Michigan, and there, this is in Traverse City, Michigan, and there's a great piece of land that has forever been a Boy Scout camp, and the Boy Scouts have just announced that they're not going to send Boy Scouts there anymore because they don't have enough Boy Scouts to send. So I was actually talking to them about modeling that piece of land's future off of what some state parks are beginning to do, which is hold first-time campers sessions. So they invite people to come to the state park, and there'll be a park ranger there waiting for you with a tent, and we'll show you how to do it. Hmm. You got a whole generation of young parents, or not a whole generation, but much of it, that really didn't have much experience with nature. So we've got to figure out some ways to make that happen, to actually be active and not just wring our hands at the
end. You know, I was thinking about you and this idea that we've been talking about for a long time. Probably a couple of weeks ago, I don't even know what I was doing up at 2 in the morning, but turned on the TV, and there was a movie that I had never seen before, and but I'm sure a lot of people have seen before, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, with Jimmy Stewart. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, that's like, so it's like, that was, I think, from 1954 or something like that. You know, he's talking about getting kids out in nature and how that's going to help them in their life.
It's true.
And,
it's true.
You know, that's what the whole thing is about, basically. I mean, so there's the whole issue with somebody's going to be damming the river or whatever, but the idea of getting kids out into nature is something that, I mean, it's not a new idea. I mean, not to take anything away from what you're doing, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, it's...
No, and I should have quoted from that movie in these books. I didn't think of that. No, I never claimed that any of these ideas are new. In fact, I just wrote a blog post on the Children Nature Network website, which is the nonprofit that grew out of Last Child in the Woods, about it was a cautionary essay And it was about two things. One was the nature study movement of the first part of the past century. It was the late 1800s, but mainly the early 1900s. That was a movement very similar to the Children of Nature movement. It was more professionalized at that point, perhaps. It focused on schools, but it also focused on people's everyday life, and it's focused more on the spiritual qualities of that connection than the current movement does, even though we focus on that too. It became culturally quite big, quite important, and nobody remembers it today. The other thing that happened at the same time, the early part of the 20th century, was Frederick Law Olmsted and the urban idea that, you know, garden cities, that cities should be filled with nature, and that it had something to do with health. Central Park was not created to make a nice view. It was because the industrialists of New York knew that their workers would be more productive if they got outside in nature. And that was an ethic attached to urban design. I mean, the urban designers even knew how many steps a family should have to take to get to a neighborhood park. So they figured that out. That went away at the same time. And we got these housing tracts that became the worst of both worlds, urban and suburban. Those are cautionary tales that, any movement, and I've said this often, any movement that over-professionalizes and doesn't plant seeds that grow on their own is going to be in trouble. And by grow on their own, I mean contagious things, that people see other people having a whole lot of fun and they want to do that too. And that, so Vitamin N actually is a collection of as many of those ideas as I can get. I don't think the Children of Nature movement, or the New Nature movement, as I usually call it because it includes adults, I don't think that's going to go away. In fact, it gets bigger and bigger. But we do have to be careful. We do have to make sure that this becomes something that people do for themselves rather than sitting around waiting for policy changes.
Talking with Richard Louv, who is the author of Vitamin N, 500 Ways to Enrich the Health and Happiness of Your Family and Community and Combat Nature Deficit Disorder. He's also the author of The Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to keep talking to Richard. We want to get into some of the specifics about some of those 500 ways to enrich the health and happiness of the family and community. I'm Armin Brott, and you're listening to Positive Parenting.
You must be your fairy godmother.
Yes. It doesn't take a fairy godmother to tell you that the right fit means everything.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in that.
Children under 4'9" need to be in a booster seat because they aren't ready for adult safety belts alone. Remember that 4'9" is the magic number. And get your little pumpkin there safely in a booster seat.
Oh, thank you.
For more information, visit boosterseat.gov. This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. If you're just joining us, talking with Richard Louv, the author of Vitamin N, The Essential Guide to a Nature-Rich Life. I want to have you talk a little bit about survival versus just fun. There are certain skills that you should probably learn. Just who knows if your plane goes down or your car runs out of gas or something and you happen to be in an area. I mean, as far as how to make a fire, how to build a shelter that's going to be relatively waterproof, how to tell which direction the sun is coming up. Do you think that those are skills that you're talking about that are valuable, or are those just not necessarily part of the whole thing?
Well, yeah, no, sure, they're valuable, and there are a lot of those in this book. I mean, for instance, the lost art of finding your way, I mean, using a compass, studying the stars to know where you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it goes a little deeper than, I mean, survival is important, but a lot of these things also happen to be a lot of fun, and they also happen to be things that not only, for instance, the lost art of finding your way, that's not only about using a compass, it's, to quote a great author whose name is escaping me right now, you have to know where you are to know who you are. And that means your own bioregion. That means where you live. That means the natural history around you. It really, there's an issue of psychological survival here, too. I happen to think that natural history is as important to our psychological health and our sense of belonging somewhere as human history, that we really ought to know as much about that in our own where we live as we do the human history, which usually is about battles.
Talk a little bit about the role of technology in helping to bring people closer to nature.
Sure. There's a section in the book called High Tech, High Nature, and it's about lots of alternative ways to do that. From wild snapping, which is what I call digital photography. I mean, I do that when I hike. I take my digital camera. And it's great coming home with a lot of photographs that I can send to my friends, and it's a lot easier to send them a digital photograph of nature than it is to send them a fish that I caught. Being a sound catcher, there's a great guy that I write about who's written several books about how to use sound equipment, again, to collect nature sounds. So it's not that technology is necessarily the enemy, but it's overused, and often we don't have a litmus test for appropriate use. My litmus test is how long does it take to look away from that screen to actually use the rest of your senses. There's one suggestion in Vitamin M that actually a mother suggested, which is it's called bookending, which means, sure, let the kids and everybody in the family or everybody in the class use technology as much as they want before you go on that hike or other nature adventure, but leave it behind. And then when you get back, pick up the gadgets again and use them as much as you can. You know, report the birds you've seen to the Cornell Bird Watch, for instance, online, to help track species. But while you're out there, you know, use this other medium, which is called nature, which excites our senses. We have as many as 30 human senses. The people who study human senses no longer talk about 5. They talk about conservatively 10. And most of our days, and particularly for kids, are spent in environments now in which we are trying to push away most of our senses in order to focus using just a couple senses to go anywhere in the world, allegedly through the Internet. That, to me, is the very definition of being less alive. Now, how many parents want their child to be less alive? It really does come down to that, even more than the health issues. That, you know, we now know a lot more about the benefits of being outside that are specific to being in natural settings, to psychological health, physical health, cognitive functioning. We learn better. There's now studies showing that standardized test scores go up in green schools compared to non-green schools, and by that I mean nature. You know, a garden on the campus, field trips, what a concept. All of those things help, even those test scores go up.
Would you go back just a little bit to talking about the more than 5 senses? I'm curious about if you tell us about a few of those.
Sure. We have some of the ability of bats to use echolocation. In fact, to know where we are in a space. And in fact, some people who have lost their sight have learned how to use a rudimentary form of echolocation. We have, according to the study that came out, I think, about 10 years ago, we have the ability to use our nose, just our nose, eyes covered, ears plugged, to track a trail through the woods. And the people who were doing this study, and of course college students were the guinea pigs, they noticed that the college students on their hands and knees tracking that trail through the woods did something that every animal that makes its living with its nose does. They zigzagged. This is part of who we are. This is part of our humanity. I mean, military studies of soldiers that were done in Afghanistan and in Iraq. The U.S. military asked, why do some soldiers know that there's something down that alley, that and they shouldn't go down that alley? Why do some soldiers know that and others don't? And we used to call this the sixth sense. What they found was the soldiers who have that ability come from two places, tough inner-city neighborhoods, or they grew up outside more, usually in rural areas. I mean, this is just, you know, a lot of these are spatial senses that we just don't know we have. I interviewed a guy who teaches people how to become pilots of cruise ships. He says he has two kind of students. One grew up on couches, playing video games, et cetera. He says that student has a talent I need, got a lot of electronics on the ships. The other kind of student that he gets grew up more outside. He said that kind of student also has an ability that I need. That kind of student can actually tell where the ship is. And he wasn't trying to be funny. He was literal. He said they have developed spatial senses that have atrophied in the students that he gets who grew up on couches playing video games. But he goes farther. He says his ideal student would be a student that has both sets of abilities that come from the virtual world and come from the natural world. I think that should be one of the goals of modern education.
Tell us a little bit about, Richard, we only have just a couple minutes left, about the ideal way to get started on this. I mean, so many people live in urban areas and there's not an awful lot of green space around. What do you need as a minimum to get going?
Well, you don't need a lot. I mean, this can start in an inner-city neighborhood. I mean, Sierra Club used to have a program that go into inner-city neighborhoods with, I think they still have this, put backpacks on kids and go for a five-mile hike and look for nature. They'd always find it. It's a different kind of nature that maybe you and I grew up with, that they can find it. I think one of the things that parents have to do, and this book isn't only for parents, but that's prime in the book, is quit trying to feel like we have to know everything. In fact, having a sense of wonder can actually grow if you know less, and when you're out there having that discovery with your kids. We have to put it on the calendar. I mean, we put all kinds of things. We put Suzuki violin lessons on the calendar. We have to, as families, begin to do that with nature. It's not going to happen accidentally. Another thing is finding new ways to deal with the fear we feel as parents or as teachers or as communities. There are sections in this book about how to deal with that fear.
Fear of nature?
That is secondary. Fear of strangers is a big one.
Okay.
But that's followed by fear of nature often. And we have to be constructive about that and not just live in nostalgic in ways to connect to nature. So there's a lot of examples in this book about how to deal with that. It's really practical advice. And finally, I think that we have to do two things. We don't necessarily know how to do this. A generation has gone by. There may be even some people think it's a lost generation, but I don't, in terms of connection to nature. But we can turn to other families that do know more, that did grow up that way. And so these family nature clubs that are spreading all over the country and now all over Canada and now in China, we're promoting them in China, in which multiple families band together and show up at the park together and go for a hike together. And they have perceived safety in numbers, and somebody there knows something about camping that you may not. I think the last thing is, this book, Vitamin N, is designed, and there are other good books out there that do this too, designed to really offer positive, practical things to do. And this isn't theoretical. These are practical things. And they also happen to be two things. They also happen to be fun, all of them, but they also provide the parents or the adults, the teachers, with all of the benefits to their health, their stress level, their physical health, their mental health, as they do to kids. So there's a great payoff here for anybody who wants to do this.
Richard Louv, the author of Vitamin N, The Essential Guide to a Nature-Rich Life. What's the website for more on this, Richard?
Probably the easiest one is vitaminnfornature.com. People can also go to the Children in Nature Network, which is childreninnature.org.
Excellent. Richard, thanks very much.
Thank you, Armin. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.